The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. We have a lot to get to on today's program. We've got the end of the year mega montage. So if you haven't tried the YouTube stream yet, this might be a good day to do that, because you'll get to see all of the clips as well. So that'll be coming up probably in 10, 15 minutes if you wanted to take the time here early on in the show to switch over. Richard, by the way, was telling me yesterday, I think we had the most viewers to the live stream on YouTube yet. So yesterday was a big day for us there. And if you switch over now, today could be even bigger. We might also, if we have time at the end, if the montage doesn't go too long, we might have time at the end for some listener and reader feedback as well. And I mentioned the TV program on God's Family Government. We'll probably, just because we won't have time today, we'll probably push that back for tomorrow's program. Speaking of tomorrow, you have the Wednesday edition of Trumpet Hour, and I've gotten a summary from Joel Hilliker and Richard Palmer on some of the topics that are going to be discussed on that program. They're going to be talking about the 20 most important events of the past decade. As you know, we're coming up to the end of the calendar year today, but this is also the end of a decade. And just as an aside, it's nice to go into a decade that we can now call the 20s. I wasn't quite sure what to call this past decade, the teens, I guess. And then I think the decade before it was the 2000s. But this reminds me of the way it was back in the 90s and the 80s when it was so simple. You were a child of the 80s or the 70s, and then it got a little more complicated with all these new terms, millennials and whatnot. In any event, tomorrow we enter into the 20s, the decade of the 20s, and on the first Trumpet Hour program, they'll be going back over the 20 most important and significant events over the past 10 years. You'll be hearing about the reign of Antiochus and then the rise of Jeroboam following that. And they'll be discussing the Arab Spring, just to name a few, the Iran nuke deal. Brexit, of course, will be a big topic in the conversation. You know, so many of you know what Mr. Armstrong said about Britain not being a part of the European Union, the prophesied United States of Europe. He said Britain will be no part of it. And so we come into the year 2020, and of course, Britain's on the way out. Herbert Armstrong was saying it would happen back in the 1950s. Imagine that. You talk about hearing the headlines, in this case, decades before it actually happened. How could he know? How could he be able to project that far in advance? Well, because he based it all on Bible prophecy. Over the past 10 years, if you've been reading The Trumpet or watching my Father's Key of David program, you've received new understanding on the Prince of Rosh there in the book of Ezekiel. And my father's made some pretty incredible comments over the years regarding the ruler of Russia. He's coming up to his 20-year anniversary, Vladimir Putin, that is. 20 years in power. My father, back in 2008, he said, will a crisis occur over Ukraine? This was when Putin was on the march. And then my father said, well, Ukraine's probably next. That was in 2008 when he said it. And of course, we saw it all come to pass in 2013, I think it was. On Trumpet Hour tomorrow, they're also going to be discussing the financial crisis in Europe, going back again over the past decade, and how that Germany has used the financial crisis to dominate Europe. It's just waiting for the strong man to come along. Well, another significant story over the past 10 years, too, is the prophesied fall of Iraq, or Iran's takeover of Iraq. That's something that my father was writing about back in the early to mid 1990s. And you look at what's happening in Iraq, even today, it's the big headline at the Drudge Report right now. This from our friend Jonathan Spire in Israel. He says, the U.S.-Iran showdown begins in Iraq. The article here, this is from the Wall Street Journal. It says, the U.S. killed at least 25 Hezbollah fighters on Sunday night in its first counterstrike in a decade against the Iran-aligned Iraqi Shia militia. So it talks about these U.S. F-15s. That hit these sites in Iraq, these Iranian militia groups, after they killed an American contractor and wounded some other U.S. Service personnel. Spire says the war against Islamic State in Iraq looks likely to be overshadowed by a growing confrontation between Iranian proxies and roughly 5,200 U.S. troops in the country. So that was what was happening on Sunday. And then just this morning, we received news about these Iranians surrounding our embassy in Baghdad. This is from Reuters. U.S. embassy evacuated as violent Baghdad protesters denounce airstrikes. The U.S. ambassador to Iraq and other staff were evacuated from their embassy in Baghdad for their safety on Tuesday. So that's happening right now, even as we speak. The Baghdad embassy, U.S. embassy, surrounded by these Iranian militiamen. It gives some of the backstory, what led up to the airstrikes and so on. President Trump, for his part, this was just tweeted about an hour ago. The president said, Iran killed an American contractor, wounding many. We strongly responded and always will. Now Iran is orchestrating an attack on the U.S. embassy in Iraq. They will be held fully responsible. In addition, we expect Iraq to use its forces to protect the embassy and so notified. He's saying there that we're not getting the kind of support from Iraqi forces like we thought we would. And that's because Iran has taken over. They have free reign in the nation. It's exactly the way we prophesied it would be, going back to the mid-1990s. Now, it's hard to say how intense this will get, if it'll turn into, I would imagine we have quite a few more, just a stronger installation there than we ever did in Benghazi back in the earlier part of this decade. But still, things are intensifying. And you certainly see Iran's fingerprints all over the region. What a significant development that has been these past 10 years. As I say, they'll be discussing that and more tomorrow on the Wednesday edition of Trumpet Hour. So make sure that you tune in to that. Well, as we head into a new decade, there's so much talk about here in the UK, in the United States. There's so much optimism. Optimism is in the air. There was a story in the Telegraph today. Britain is back. Britain is back. Let's enter the new decade with pride and optimism for the future. When have you read stories about this? For so long. Leaders in the UK, leaders in the United States have just been apologizing for our history. Apologizing for the empire. Well, here's the Telegraph saying Britain's back. Let's go forward with pride and optimism. The Financial Times had an editorial today, too. How Britain can prosper after it leaves the EU. And as Richard was telling me, this is a publication that was very much against Brexit. But even the Financial Times is kind of getting swept into this as well. They're caught up into this wave of optimism. How Britain can prosper as it leaves the EU. The Telegraph says here, as the decade draws to a close, Britain has got its mojo back. We talked about this recently as well. It says Boris Johnson stands now at the helm of this great nation, ready to steer it towards a new age of unity and prosperity. It says Britain is the cause of much that is right around about the world. It's the cause of so much that's good and right. And we've made this point before. This history that more people in the UK should be proud of. Of course, that should be tempered with a little bit of humility as well. And certainly an acknowledgement of God's mighty hand in our history. Those blessings that he promised to the descendants of Abraham. Those blessings that were promised primarily to the descendants of Ephraim and Manasseh. This author here in the Telegraph, he says there's no other nation in the world that can go from paralysis to potential prosperity so immediately. He's really confident in Britain's future and how quickly things can turn around for the better. It says the English language, our gift to the world, is the global tool of commerce, technology, education, government, and invention. And let us never forget that this country is the home of the rule of law. Magna Carta is not a historical relic, but the underpinning of the global rules-based order. It says our independent judiciary, property rights, labor laws, and legal reasoning are the envy of the world. This we must cherish as the bedrock of our dealings at home and abroad. You see, some of this, it is refreshing to at least hear or read something that's positive, that's not just running down the empire and its history. But it says here, our traits of fairness, openness, law, liberty, and language mark us out as a special people. This is not elitism, but self-awareness. So here's an author, a journalist, acknowledging that Britain, that it's a special nation, but there's no acknowledgement or understanding of the fact that it's God who made our nation special in the first place. It's God who gifted the United States with superpower status. It's God who gave the British people the empire, who prepared the British people for the empire. I just finished this book on the conspiracy, the mysterious William Shakespeare. Just a lot of fascinating history in this book about Queen Elizabeth and how much she and her successor, King James, they both just valued the theater and all these masterpieces that were composed by Shakespeare. And how much they wanted to preserve it and spread that language and spread that culture. And so many of those plays really do bring honor to the British monarchy. And Queen Elizabeth knew that was important. She knew that was a way to rally the people. You see, God's hand in preparing Britain for its empire, even going back to the glory days of literature and playwrights, the late 1500s, as God was preparing this little island that couldn't contain Shakespeare, he had to get out and travel the world, and then he wrote about it. And then later the empire went right around the world. Well, here we are at the last days, and there's a temporary resurgence, and we're heading into the 20s. And if you know anything about the last century, that was a roaring time for our nations. The roaring 20s, and you can look back at the 1920s and see some pretty interesting parallels. In the case of America, you had some conservative leadership in the White House for most of the decade with Calvin Coolidge. And here we have President Trump, who, while he may not be the most conservative president morally, he certainly has taken some very conservative positions, particularly with respect to the economy and jobs and that sort of thing. But here, just in 3 years, America's gone from being one-fifth of the world's total economy to one-fourth. In 3 years' time, that's a resurgence. That's a resurgence under the leadership of this president. It was interesting when you think about parallels with the 1920s. I always go back to this book by Paul Johnson, which I read years ago, A History of the American People. But just to pull out some statements he made in there about the 1920s, that decade was characterized by the longest housing boom on record. Johnson said between 1919 and 1929, there was a phenomenal growth of productivity in the U.S., output per worker in manufacturing industry rising by 43%, a real boom in manufacturing, in jobs. And of course, a boom in the world of technology and advancement. It says here in 1914, well, this might be a paraphrase, but there were 1.2 million automobiles in the United States in 1914. And by the end of the 1920s, just 15 years later, there were 26.5 million automobiles. 26.5 million cars. One vehicle for every five people in the country. We went from it being a rarity to then, well, everybody had one. Every family had a car. Johnson wrote this: what the American 20s demonstrated was the speed with which industrial productivity could transform luxuries into necessities and spread them down the class pyramid. What was a luxury in 1914, all of a sudden it's a necessity. And people could afford it because of the assembly line. They're at the Ford factory. Henry Ford making those cars about as cheaply as you could make them. And Americans just buying them up. The roaring 20s. The booming economy. There was a stock market boom. Now, as we now know, it was built on a flawed foundation. And it's very similar to today. But still, it was boom time in the 1920s. This article here from a source in Alaska, it says, as it was in 1920, America is starting out this decade with an economic boom unlike any other, a time of immense prosperity and growth. Immense prosperity and growth. And yet, we've got to look at the foundation. Reuters had a piece about the decade of debt. If you look back at the decade we're coming out of, this article says it should be called the decade of debt. That's how we recovered from the financial crisis, going back to 2008. It was debt, taking on more debt, that got us out. And we're just adding more and more to it, as I've been covering recently on this program. Reuters says, with interest rates locked in at rock-bottom levels, courtesy of the Fed's easy money policy after the financial crisis, companies found it cheaper than ever to tap into the corporate bond market to load up on cash. This is talking about not the 1920s, the decade we're just coming out of. Reuters says bond issuance by American companies topped $1 trillion in each year of the decade that began on January 1st, 2010. That's an unmatched run, it says. Never have we seen anything like this. $1 trillion every single year. And of course, we're seeing, like they saw in the 1920s, a stock market boom at the start of 1929. They were selling some stocks at 50 times the earnings of these companies. It was just based on pure speculation. It was a massive bubble waiting to pop. And well, it did, didn't it? In October of 1929. It all came crashing down. But before that, it was boom time. Before that, it was an entertainment-crazed society. Oh, yes. Paul Johnson says it's hard to point any aspect of culture in which the 1920s did not mark spectacular advancements. The American superpower becoming the dominant culture on Earth. And you know, at that time, there was also, you could say, a kind of new morality sweeping across our nations during the so-called Roaring Twenties. Mr. Armstrong brings this out in Missing Dimension and Sex, his autobiography, about how that the avalanche of sex knowledge and literature was put out there. All of it, of course, missing or leaving out the missing dimension in sex, why God created it. Why marriage? Why family? Listen to this from MDS. It says, in the wake of World War I, the agitation resulting from Freud's revolutionary conclusions finally brought about the toppling of the legal barriers, and the moral barriers began breaking down simultaneously. With the removal of legal restraints against sex instruction, medical doctors and psychoanalysts began grinding out volume after volume, imparting heretofore banned instruction about sex. This was the pendulum swing from the old morality to the new. It says, the world began throwing off restraints. The revolt was on against prudery, repression, and ignorance. The new sensual knowledge, with its most needed dimension missing, quickly began to be gulped in by curiosity-hungry minds. That was the 1920s. Now you look at our decade, or the decade we're entering into. Homosexual marriage is the new normal. Transgenderism everywhere that you turn. And just the push, just forcing this upon our society. One of our articles this morning says, these children will navigate a complicated world. They'll be taught that climate change is settled science, but gender is choice. Climate change, that's been settled. That's scientifically proven. Gender, well, you can choose that. There's nothing science about it. You can choose. This is what our children are going to be taught in the 2020s. And starting at a very young age. The 1920s was also known as a decade of tremendous advancement in technology. I mentioned that about the automobiles and production lines and so on. In one decade, you think about the average American home going from not having a car to, well, now it's a necessity. And look at the fast-changing world that we're living in today, where everyone's connected. And the phones and the gadgets and all those things, they're all necessities. We have to have them. And we have to have the newest. And while all of this prosperity is roaring at home, you have the rise of fascism abroad. This was happening in the 1920s as well. Not long after that Great Depression set in, Adolf Hitler came to power. You look around the world today and you see, you certainly see these nationalist movements, these borderline fascism movements, they're on the march. But in 1925, in 1926, in 1927, I mean, it was a big party. But the signs were there. When you consider, like Mr. Armstrong explained, the rapid spread of gross immorality, skyrocketing debt, all of that, a booming stock market based on pure speculation. And then comes October of 1929, the stock market crash, the Great Depression, trade wars, the reign of Adolf Hitler, the policies in the West of appeasement, and then finally, worldwide war, an explosion of violence, that spread over all the earth. This is Winston Churchill writing back in 1922, writing during the decade of the Roaring Twenties. And he said this: "What a disappointment the 20th century has been. How terrible and how melancholy is long series of disastrous event which have darkened the first 20 years. A long series of disastrous events have darkened these first two decades. We've seen in every country a dissolution, a weakening of those bonds, a challenge to those principles, a decay of faith, an abridgment of hope, on which structure and ultimate existence of civilized society depends." He says later, "Can you doubt, my faithful friends, as you survey this somber panorama, that mankind is passing through a period marked not only by an enormous destruction and abridgment of human species, not only by a vast impoverishment and reduction in means of existence, but also that destructive tendencies have not yet run their course?" And he goes on to talk about some of Britain's glorious history, the history of the empire. Some fascinating parallels there, comparing the 1920s to the first part of this decade we're entering into on the calendar year tomorrow. When we come back, we'll have the much-anticipated montage from 2019. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
William Barr has just been sworn in as the new Attorney General, gaining broad control of the special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation.
But ultimately, I agreed to serve because I believe strongly in public service. I revere the law.
Does the public understand just how much trouble the president is in?
To believe that the president isn't compromised requires such a leap of faith.
I think we have all the proof we need of a scandal that's arguably worse than Watergate.
Late today, the Attorney General William Barr sent Congress this four-page letter outlining the key findings of Robert Mueller's investigation. And on the question of whether the president obstructed justice, Mueller leaves it up to the Justice Department to decide if the president should be charged with the crime. And tonight, Barr says the answer is no.
Issuing an astonishing 2,800 subpoenas, 500 search warrants, and interviewing 500 separate witnesses. For Mueller's central assignment, the letter says the special counsel did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with the Russians to interfere in the election.
Can you repeat the question, sir? You're going to have to repeat that for me. Can you repeat the last part of that question? I'd have to look more closely at the statute.
And what was the question, sir?
Can you repeat the question?
What was the question?
Can you read the last question?
Can you start it again?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that one? And the question was?
The person who learned the most about the Mueller report today was Bob Mueller.
Once again, we have breaking news tonight centering around that explosive whistleblower complaint.
There was no quid pro quo in that conversation.
Well, if that's the case, then why doesn't the president simply release the transcript of that call?
The White House has just released a transcript of President Trump's July 25th phone call with Ukraine's president.
Read the transcript. The president has done nothing wrong, and the Democrats know it.
My call was perfect.
I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry.
My summary of the president's call was meant to be at least part in parody. The fact that that's not clear is a separate problem in and of itself.
Not a thing wrong, unless you heard the Adam Schiff version where he made up my conversation. He actually made it up. It should be criminal. It should be treasonous. He made it up, every word of it, made up, and read to Congress as though I said it.
This committee will not be used to out the whistleblower.
I don't see how this is outing the whistleblower. The witness has testified in his deposition that he doesn't know who the whistleblower is. You have said, even though no one believes you, you have said you don't know who the whistleblower is.
I wish I had heard just some of the righteous indignation we heard in the committee today when the president questioned that fundamental conclusion of our intelligence agencies. But of course, they were silent. In the words of my great colleague, we are better than that. Adjourned.
90% of the testimony being used by the House violates the hearsay rule.
We presumed, yeah, I was presuming that it was. That was my presumption, my personal presumption. Again, I was presuming it was a presumption.
No one on this planet told you that President Trump was tying aid to investigations. Yes or no?
Yes.
So, you really have no testimony today that ties President Trump to a scheme to withhold aid from Ukraine in exchange for these investigations.
Other than my own presumption.
Which is nothing.
Article 1 is adopted. The question is on...
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has not brought the articles of impeachment to the Senate.
Seems like people have a spring in their step because the president was held accountable for his reckless behavior.
But Pelosi's not ready to take the next step. She's refusing to send the articles of impeachment to the Senate.
Looks like the prosecutors are getting cold feet.
As you can see from the bottom of your screen, that the NASDAQ has hit 9,000 for the first time ever.
By record online orders, as well as strong sales.
Well, consumer confidence is doing well.
Non-farm payrolls rose by 224,000 jobs in June, beating expectations.
We cut taxes for everybody at every single income level.
And working class incomes are rising faster than they have in years.
I don't see inflation. I don't see recession. 50 years ago, that number was a curse. Now it's a blessing.
So we are going to be doubling American exports.
There's a reason we haven't heard one Democrat hopeful talk about the economy.
We are living in the best performing economy in the world.
People don't want to say good things. And this is the best number I've ever seen in my life.
We've never seen anything like this before. And so the economic consequences are going to be so positive.
You can't contradict that these are the best numbers of our lives.
Now, almost every sector of the economy did add jobs.
The economy keeps on roaring with the Dow and S&P 500 rallying to all-time highs.
The regulation relief.
Can it last forever, Jim? How can it last forever?
So 50-year low on unemployment.
Game-changing.
And the unemployment rate among blacks, that dropped to 5.5% and is now at the lowest level on record.
And you know something, Joe? It doesn't matter whether you hate them or like them. These are real numbers.
The economy is booming, wages are rising, and poverty is plummeting. We have the best economy we've ever had, and believe me, we're just getting started.
A long-awaited report by the Justice Department on the Russia investigation was just released.
This is very serious misconduct on your watch, but this wasn't just sloppiness. These were brutal mistakes, deliberate errors, concealments involving search warrant surveillance activities of an American citizen.
And Durham has said publicly on the record that he does not agree with this key finding that the FBI was on solid ground in July of 2016 when it opened the counterintelligence investigation.
As a director sitting on top of an organization of 38,000 people, you can't run an investigation that's seven layers below you. You have to leave it to the career professionals to do.
Do you believe that?
No. From the very first day of this investigation, which was July 31st, 2016, all the way to its end in September 2017, there was not one incriminatory bit of evidence to come in. It was all exculpatory. The FBI ignores it, presses ahead, withholds that information from the court, withholds critical exculpatory information from the court while it gets a electronic surveillance warrant. The dossier that they ultimately relied on to get the FISA warrant was a complete sham. But here, to me, is the damning thing. They not only didn't tell the court that what they had been relying on was completely rubbish, They actually started putting in things to bolster the Steele report by saying, well, we talked to the sources and they appeared to be truthful. But they don't inform the court that what they're truthful about is that the dossier is false. So that's hard to explain. And the core statement, in my opinion, by the IG is that these irregularities, these misstatements, these omissions were not satisfactorily explained.
But these were dirty people, these were bad people, these were evil people. And I hope that someday I'm going to consider it my greatest or one of my greatest achievements, getting rid of them. Because we have no place in our country for people like that.
Panic in El Paso this morning when a day of shopping turned into horror with an active shooter on the loose.
Run out that way.
Shoppers rushing out of Cielo Vista Mall and the Walmart Supercenter next door, where bodies were seen lying outside.
Nine people have been killed in a second mass shooting in less than 24 hours. This time, it happened in Dayton, Ohio.
Authorities say a shooting at a synagogue outside San Diego has left one person dead and multiple people injured.
On the last day of Passover, bloodshed in the middle of Shabbat services.
We have breaking news to tell you about out of Jersey City, New Jersey, just across the river from Manhattan, where a shootout has left six dead, including a police officer and two suspects. That man shot and killed the officer, then left in a truck and ended up in a kosher supermarket. That led to a firefight with police.
Now to that brutal attack on a rabbi's home outside New York City, where dozens were celebrating Hanukkah. An intruder bursting in, slashing people with a large machete before driving away. Five people were hurt, among them the rabbi's son.
UK Prime Minister Theresa May is stepping down today as leader of the Conservative Party. It comes after she was unable to gain Parliament's support for a plan to leave the EU.
And therefore, I give notice that Boris Johnson is elected as the leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party.
Response to the strong criticism by the chief rabbi of Jeremy Corbyn's handling of cases of anti-Semitism in the party. Ephraim Mervis, Britain's most senior Jewish leader, said that a poison of anti-Semitism had taken root in the Labour Party.
Our exit poll is suggesting that there will be a Conservative majority of 86.
This poll is anywhere near right. You've produced your worst result since 1935.
Yeah, if it is anywhere near right, that's right.
This could build a new Conservative majority across Britain for another generation.
Mr. Snell, how is it looking for you tonight?
Oh, it's disastrous.
Well, you'll see immediately that the board gets washed in blue.
I want to also make it clear that I will not lead the party in any future general election campaign.
And I hereby declare that the said Boris Johnson is duly elected.
Let's get Brexit done.
Israelis cast their ballots today for the second time in 5 months, and several early exit polls suggest Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's re-election plans are falling short.
Now, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he has failed to form a majority government.
But just hours before his midnight deadline, Benny Gantz threw in the towel.
Israel is now officially headed for a March 2nd election, its third in less than a year.
Politics are in turmoil in Israel. Two elections and three attempts to form a coalition have failed to produce a new government for a year. President Trump, a big supporter, has been trying to help the Israeli leader, changing four decades of American policy, legitimizing Jewish settlements, a step Netanyahu has been calling for. He's hoping voters in Israel will reward him for his close relations with the President of the United States. After long deliberations, Israel's Attorney General, one of Netanyahu's former close advisors, indicted the Prime Minister on charges of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. Netanyahu called it a political coup. He's also called it a witch hunt.
First time a sitting prime minister in Israel has been indicted. As
echoes what is happening here in the U.S.
Yeah, the charges are based on crimes no one has ever been accused or prosecuted of before.
Because they want to get rid of Bibi Netanyahu, longest serving prime minister there. His opponents looking for anything they can get.
It's clear from the timing that this is designed to depose the prime minister without a trial.
Words like deep state here in the United States, I've gotten a crash course on Israeli politics. There's something very similar there.
Except the deep state there is even deeper.
You can still smell the smoke here across the city. We've been hearing people singing hymns. And many tonight in Paris simply cannot believe what happened. A symbol of Paris, the iconic Notre Dame Cathedral, will never be the same. Smoke and fire were first spotted among the scaffolding around 6:30 p.m. Clouds of ash quickly spread across the City of Lights.
This church is 850 years old. It's visited by 12 million people every year.
A year since the unrest erupted across the nation, the defiance and passion remain strong. In the city center, black-clad rioters focused their anger on old targets. Banks and shop fronts were smashed, cars overturned and set alight, and barricades set up in anticipation of the police response.
But today, the Chancellor herself answered questions about her health for the first time, insisting she was okay. Angela Merkel is 64 and is due to leave office by 2021.
How do you solve the pending trade war between Mr. Trump, Germany, and the rest of the EU?
Now also putting on the idea of tariffs on EU products. You're now hearing it. It's a fight on both sides, across the Pacific, across the Atlantic. It is only going to get bigger into our 2020 presidential elections.
Washington had made it clear in advance that non-compliance would have consequences. Berlin rejects the idea that Washington can legally impose sanctions on third parties. Despite the anger in Berlin, Germany is not planning any action against Washington. That's not the case with Russia, the other partner in the pipeline. President Vladimir Putin has threatened retaliation, and Moscow has made it clear it will go ahead and finish the project, whatever the United States does.
Unprecedented is how police are describing this attack.
A horrific terror attack that unfolded in New Zealand overnight. Not one, but two mosques in Christchurch were targeted. The country's worst mass shooting ever.
49 people are known to have died.
Dozens more are being treated in hospital for gunshot wounds. Witnesses say at least one gunman opened fire on worshippers at the mosques as they were gathering for Friday prayers.
People don't really understand it until you actually see it coming at you in a wall of flame.
Well, scores of fires are burning out of control across Australia amid a heat wave, which has seen temperatures exceed 40 Celsius in every state.
We've seen quite significant air quality issues associated with that smoke overnight. Well, we've had an inversion, what we call a cap on the atmosphere that's really trapped the air overnight.
We're following in New Zealand. Tourists visited an active volcano, some walking right into the crater. Many of them never made it out. The volcano on White Island erupted several times while the tourists were there. Five people are confirmed dead. Eight people are still missing. There doesn't appear to be much hope of finding them alive.
We begin tonight with a horrific scene unfolding overseas. Eight bomb attacks targeting Christians and tourists in Sri Lanka, and a ninth bomb targeting police. The series of explosions tearing through churches filled with worshippers attending Easter Mass. More than 200 people killed, hundreds hurt. Several Americans among the victims.
These people who want democracy, many of them are young, John. They've only ever lived under the one country, two systems policy. And they feel that China is encroaching on their civil liberties. They have told me that they would rather die than live under China.
But by nightfall, the clashes were happening in multiple locations across the city and getting worse. The police are stressed and acting at times with little restraint. This was Taikoo Underground Station, where protesters were corralled by the police and then beaten. and driven down the escalators.
For a second consecutive Sunday, Hong Kongers filled the streets. A sea of black that stretched for kilometers along the island.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has announced that the U.S. is designating the Iranian Revolutionary Guard as a terror group.
I am announcing our intent to designate the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, including its Quds Force, as a foreign terrorist organization. This is the first time that the United States has designated a part of another government as an FTO.
Two commercial tankers suffered damage while moving through international waters in the Gulf of Oman.
Now, the tankers were damaged in explosions on Thursday. The U.S., for its part, is blaming Iran for the attacks. The Pentagon releasing this video showing what they say are Iranian forces removing a mine from one of the ships.
Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt has warned Iran of serious consequences after the Iranian Revolutionary Guard seized a British-flagged oil tanker in the Gulf yesterday evening.
This morning, with some of the world's largest oil processing facilities in Saudi Arabia still smoldering, President Trump threatening military action in retaliation that the highly coordinated attack was launched from Iranian soil. Nearly a dozen cruise missiles and at least 20 drones packed with explosives.
We're getting dramatic new details on the anti-government protests in Iran. The State Department says the death toll could be as high as 1,000. The department also says it has video from November showing Iran's military forces using machine guns to mow down protesters.
Without warning, the IRGC opened fire on the protesters.
Israeli rockets struck Gaza overnight on Saturday and into Sunday morning, continuing the hours of heavy fire between Palestinian militants and Israel that began earlier Saturday. The Israeli Defense Forces said nearly 250 rockets were fired from Gaza into Israel.
This morning, U.S. intelligence agencies are sifting through highly sensitive information that was gathered in the daring U.S. raid on the ISIS leader's compound in northwestern Syria. President Trump says the terror group's leader, that's Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, killed himself during that weekend attack.
Baghdadi was vicious and violent, and he died in a vicious and violent way as a coward running and crying. But generations of patriots before us did not work, fight, and sacrifice so that we could surrender our country to a raging left-wing mob, and that's what's happening. While they want to punish America, we will fight to preserve America, and that's what we're doing, and you're doing it incredibly well. Together, we'll stand up to socialists. We will defend our nation, the greatest and most glorious republic in the history of this world. And you know what? The best is yet to come. You know that, right?
So there you have it. That's the 2019 montage. Some of the most notable events of the year, this past year. And you heard the President of the United States there at the end talking about the best is yet to come. And of course, we have talked about a temporary salvation or a temporary resurgence in that article from May 2018 in The Trumpet. Speaking of 2019, I've probably referred to this article or quoted from it more than any other Trumpet article. A temporary resurgence. My father even said in there, conditions in America may improve for a short time, and that may well continue on through 2020. There may be a roaring period still ahead of us. But think of the parallels between now and a century ago. Just coming to this article again, when you compare what this president is doing and what his predecessor did, there has been a clear change in direction, one that will slow the speed at which America is being pulled apart without question. I mean, that has happened. It's a very definite, a different, I should say. It's a very different direction.
My father says, what we're seeing is actually a modern-day fulfillment of what happened in ancient Israel under Jeroboam II. This is from the May 2018 trumpet. My father says, it's important that we understand why we're having this resurgence. God himself, he writes, is pushing back against the Satan-inspired forces that would have destroyed this nation. He's exposing those forces so we can see them clearly. And he's using a man to save the superpower of prophetic Israel, the United States, temporarily. He's saving us temporarily. He's extending mercy for a short time. But the punishment is still coming. Victor Davis Hanson, he had a piece recently about all these attacks, these satanic attacks on America's government, on the White House, on President Trump. And he said what the radical left really fears here is not the failures, the so-called failures of Donald Trump. What they fear are his successes, his victories. Hanson says impeachment was never about Trump's failures, but about fears of his perceived successes. The left, far better than the never Trump right, grasped that Trump is succeeding and that it has little traction in demanding economic, energy, immigration, trade, and regulatory alternatives. Its lunatic multi-trillion dollar proposals ensure that it cannot attack Trump on the deficit where he is weakest. So he's really weak on this part of the booming economy. The fact that we have skyrocketing deficits. But how does Elizabeth Warren come in and criticize him for his deficits when she's proposing, well, ideas similar to what AOC, Ocasio-Cortez, is out there promoting? Tens of trillions of dollars. It says, as a result, the left rightly concluded that its only hope to save the progressive agenda is to destroy Trump before the people can vote on his agenda, which they rightly fear is succeeding. There have been successes these past 3 years, to be sure, but like that May 2018 trumpet brings out, it will not, it cannot last forever. You even look at the first 3 years of the Trump presidency, and assuming he goes on for a second term, well, Calvin Coolidge, speaking of the 1920s again, he made a comment about presidents serving two terms, serving for 8 years in the White House. He said this, an examination of the records of those presidents who have served 8 years will disclose that in almost every instance, the latter parts of their term, have shown very little in the way of constructive accomplishment. They have often been clouded with grave disappointments. In other words, it's hard to sustain some of those successes from the early years. What happens when the debt bubble explodes? What happens when the stock market bubble explodes? What happens when natural, so-called natural disasters intensify? Or when there's more wars and rumors of wars? What happens when a trade war transpires? What happens when the Mart of Nations comes together? What happens when Germany gets its strongman? What happens when the 10 nations come together in Europe? What happens when there's a global economic crisis? Things can and will. Your Bible prophesies of this. They will change dramatically. And that's what we have to be prepared for. We can't be lulled into a false sense of security. We've got to be prepared for what's coming. This is one last age of prosperity before Assyrian conquest. That's what your Bible prophesies. One quick update here. Fox News is reporting that the U.S. Embassy compound in Baghdad, while it is under siege from these crowds, and we do have quite a bit more in the way of military personnel there, so I think they have it under control, but Fox is saying that the U.S. ambassador was not evacuated. I read from that Reuters report at the start of the show, but that the ambassador was gone on a pre-planned vacation. So he's not there, he or she. I don't know who the ambassador is, but he's not in the embassy, but it's because of a vacation. In any event, it is making headlines, what's happening there in Baghdad due to the airstrikes called on by Donald Trump on Sunday. Well, that's all that we have for you on today's program, today's fast-moving program. We appreciate you joining us. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow.